the rule today of excellent speakers. He's the most junior of the three. So this is Jeremy Lombroso. He is presently a postdoc with us at Simon Fraser University. He recently completed his PhD in Paris. He was, I think it's accurate to say, the last PhD student of
the second to last.
Second to last, Philippe Langlais, before he passed in a timely manner. But he finished his PhD with Michel Soria in Lipsis Lab in Paris. We're very happy to have him with us. His area of expertise, I would say, is proximate counting, random generation, lots of fun stuff. So, Jeremy.
Thank you, Marnie. And thank you to the organizers for organizing the event and inviting me. I was nervous before, but after the two nice talks that we've already had, I'm even more nervous. So please, I apologize in advance. So the topic I'm going to tell you about is analytic random generation of combinatorial objects. It's something I'm trying to rename because I don't like the previous name. It's also called Boltzmann sampling. So you might have heard of it with that name. And the purpose of it is to take combinatorial objects and to study them by constructing them and looking at them and examining them. So to start, we have to define the universe of objects that we're going to be interested in. And this is something that you probably are familiar with. Decomposable combinatorial classes are classes which are described by symbolic rules or grammar with building blocks like the atom that counts of size 1 and the neutral element that has a zero size and ways to combine these building blocks like Tinker Toys on the side. The definitions can be possibly recursive, and the most important part of these objects and the way we're going to keep track of them is by counting their size. So a combinatorial class A will have associated to A sub n, which are the objects of size n, and this quantity is absolutely always finite. So the most classical example is binary trees. So a binary tree is either a leaf marked by a Z, which has size 1, or two subtrees, which are the left and right subtree. So I hope you don't grow sick of this example because it's like in every other slide in this talk. And to draw them out, all binary trees with four leaves, because the leaves are what we count, are drawn at the bottom. And so what we're interested in is in the random generation of any structure that you can describe with these rules. So let A still be a combinatorial class, A sub n the objects of size n, randomly drawing an object of this class by what you usually mean means that for a given n, we want to draw an object A of A sub n, which are all the objects of the class A that have size n, with probability 1 divided by A sub n. So we want every object of the same size to be drawn with the uniform probability. I see someone frowning there. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Miss, okay. So so for a lot of these objects, we have some ad hoc methods which deal with specific classes, like Remy's algorithm, which is a nice algorithm but only deals with binary trees. There's a hook formula for young tableaus. And we have all sorts of methods that deal with a few elements, but they're generally one-trick ponies. And so that's where the appeal of so-called automatic methods comes to mind. And these automatic methods are supposed to, without having to devise a special bijection or to study the properties of your object in depth, you just want to give the specification with the rules I just gave you before and have it automatically give you a generator to sample these objects randomly. So of the automatic methods that we know of, there's the recursive methods, which I'm going to talk a little bit about. but it requires pre-computing all the coefficients of the generating series up to n. And so maybe you're convinced that this is useful, but if you're not, I have a few applications. So first, in analysis, random generation is useful when you want to study objects, because specifying an object doesn't mean that you know anything about it. So for instance, its average size or its average height in a tree, or some properties that you would have to study, perhaps with difficult mathematical machinery behind it. And randomly generating elements allows you to make conjectures on what are the typical properties of these elements. And this idea is, of course, not restricted to mathematical objects. It's used in genetics when you randomly generate strings of random letters to compare them to genomes to see emerging patterns. And it has also, one of my favorite citations on this is Gasparov, 1987, who already in Russia and dealing in poetry used this idea of randomly generating verses to see if authors were actually putting stress on particular syllables for a reason, or if it was just the byproduct of randomness. And in computer systems, large computer systems nowadays, this is also very relevant for testing. So you have huge servers like maybe the ones for the Medicare in the States, which have not been stress tested enough, obviously. And with random generation, you can generate a lot of random input, like pretend users, shove it into the server at maximum speed to see if the server will be able to cope and will be resilient to that much stress. And finally, another thing that we will be using a lot in this talk is the symbolic method, the idea that you can not only, from the specification of a combinatorial class, you can not only derive its generating function, but this generating function also has analytic properties that you can evaluate it and get information that way. So the generating function A of Z of a class A encodes within a function the complete enumeration of objects for each size. The dictionary, which you're also probably familiar with, is you have the specification that directly translate into the generating functions for all the different operations that we have. And so to take again the example of binary trees, we had the specification that's B equals a leaf or a left subtree and a right subtree that translates to this equation on the generating function, which you can solve because it's a quadratic equation. Okay. So now I mentioned the recursive method. And the recursive method is just a sort of generic name to describe what your usual natural idea would be if you wanted to generate a binary tree, for instance, or any type of combinatorial object. So the idea is a divide and conquer idea, is that to build a random tree of size n, you would first put a node and then build a random, draw the random size of the left subtree, which you'll call k, and then build a random subtree of size k on the left and a random subtree of size n minus k on the right. And if you use the correct probability law, which is at the bottom here, then you have at the end a uniform binary tree of size n. So this is a very straightforward method that works for all generating all combinatorial objects that can be described. It's the work of Nienhurst and Wilf in 1978, and it was formalized afterwards by Flageolet, Zimmermann, and Van Cutsem in 94. The drawbacks of this method, as I've already mentioned, is that you have to extract all the coefficients of the enumeration of the combinatorial class up until n, and you have to store them, which can be very costly if you want to generate big objects, because you have to keep in memory this huge table of coefficients. So the reason, the raison d'être of the analytic samplers is to try to avoid having to store and compute these coefficients. So the idea is a little bit weird when you first look at it. It's that now instead of generating random objects of a fixed size, the size of the object that's going to be outputted is going to be a random variable, and instead you are going to throw the combinatorial object into a probability space with this density. So let C be a class. We draw now an object gamma of this class without specifying its size with probability z to the power of the size of the object divided by the generating function of the class. So this isn't completely nonsense, because even though you're not drawing objects uniformly over all the objects, if you have still the same probability of drawing two objects of the same size. And that you can see it clearly, because two objects of the same size will have the same probability of being drawn by the definition. And so the idea is that by evaluating the generating function at the bottom, you get a sort of biased average of all the coefficients, which means that you don't have to extract them one by one. You're just going to get them all in a bunch and then have your probabilities that way. And this probability distribution was called Boltzmann, the Boltzmann distribution when the paper was first published. But in math, it's more commonly known as the power series distribution. And one of the big draws of this distribution is that it has great algebraic properties. And it actually has the same algebraic properties as the generating functions that were seamlessly translated from the specification into the generating functions. And so I'm dismissing how we control the size for the time being, but we will go back into that. So as a result, just to show you what it looks like from an elegance point of view, you now have to the left the constructions, and to the right the corresponding algorithms that are generally one-liners. So for instance, for the neutral class or the atom class, the algorithm to draw one of those elements by a Boltzmann or an analytic sampler is simply returning that element. If you have a disjoint union B plus C, you draw a Bernoulli variable, a coin flip of probability BZ divided by BZ plus CZ. And if it's equal to 1, you recursively call the sampler for the class B. And if it isn't, you recursively call the sampler for the class C. The Cartesian product is simply calling recursively the sampler for the class B and the sampler for the class C. And for the other more complicated constructions, you draw a law, which is either the geometric, the Poisson, or the logarithmic series law, and then you return a tuple of k independent calls from the sampler.
Yep.
Z is just a parameter of this distribution?
Z is just a parameter, right. The tuning parameter that we're not going to talk about right now.
Yep. Okay. Thank you.
But it controls, obviously, as you can see here, it controls the distribution of the objects. So so I'm going to just prove the first two constructions, or first three constructions, just to get our bearings. So here's the definition again. When A is the neutral element or just an atom, the proof that this blue thing up there is actually an analytic sampler is simply that the probability of returning the empty square is Z0 divided by C0, which is 1, and same for the black square. So when you have a disjoint union, the proof is simply, so you have an object beta, suppose that the object is from the class B, an element beta which is from the class A and from the class B, the probability of drawing that element is the probability that Bernoulli random variable here is going to be equal to 1. So it's equal to 1 with probability B of Z divided by B of Z plus C of Z. And then in the recursive call, I'm sorry for switching back and forth, in the recursive call, it's whatever you are returned by gamma of B of Z. And that here is the probability that beta is returned by B. So when you develop that probability, you get this. And by simplification, you get Z of alpha by renaming beta alpha. And then B of Z plus C of Z is the generating function for A. Is that OK for everyone? And then for the Cartesian product, it's also very simple. Suppose you have an element A that's from the class of the Cartesian product of B and C. Then A is a couple with an element beta and an element gamma. And the probability of drawing alpha is the probability that you've drawn beta and gamma independently, of course. And then when you do the calculations, you end up with having at the end z to the size of alpha divided by the generating function. So now that we have these tree constructions, we are ready for our first full example, which is binary trees. So binary trees, this is the specification, a leaf or left subtree and right subtree. This is the generating function, and now here is the generator, which is just a couple lines. And it actually works, so I have a demonstration prepared in live, which is, I know, perilous. So here I have a Mathematica cheat note. I obtained the generating function here, which is what you have on your screen. And here is the direct translation of the generator, which I just gave you. So simply, if I draw a Bernoulli variable of probability z divided by b of z, the probability of drawing a leaf, then I return just this thing, which is a leaf. And if not, if it's equal to zero, I return a node, an internal node, with a recursive call for a left subtree and a recursive call for a right subtree. And so here I can call my generator live for you, and it draws a big, huge tree, and I can then draw it here for you to see. And that's a random tree of size, well, let's see, tree size. Do it again. And then here I'm going to do 100 trees. I'm going to draw 100 trees and for you to see the size, which is an element I'll develop further along. But as you can see right now, there are a lot of elements of size 1 and then size 2. And then poof, you have big elements of size 603. And if we randomly generated another tree here, we would not be so lucky. We'd probably have a tree of size 1. There you go. Yep.
So I'm just not sure that I understand the distribution. This is the non-zero probability of getting any binary tree.
So, I'm sorry?
Why is it that we're only seeing trees with 97 vertices instead of a billion vertices?
Why is it that you're seeing trees with 97 vertices instead of what?
Right.
No, what I'm saying is that the size of the tree is random. So I'm getting a tree with a size that's a random variable that has the probability distribution of...
What's the probability of distribution on the size of the tree?
So this would be point. Your z here is 0.25. So it'd be
0.25. Okay, I didn't see that. Okay, I see.
Bazillion.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Z here is the parameter, and here I cleverly plugged in.
I didn't understand what that.
Yeah, so here I picked the parameter, and then I'll tell you how I've picked it.
Yes, okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Do you want to see it again?
Yeah.
Okay, here, let's try to generate another tree. And, yeah, okay, we might.
So they're mostly really small.
And I think I should have... Oh, there we go. We have a really big tree there. Okay, and it's having trouble drawing it, but here you go. So there you go. And if we want to calculate the size of it, let's see. Okay, 2,000... No, leaves. What? It was Rorschach's birthday recently, no? So, yeah, in case it didn't work, I had a screenshot ready with a slightly less exciting tree. Okay, so one of the things I would really like to draw your attention to is that the random sampler I just showed you, the analytic random sampler, differs from the recursive types of sampler, which I talked about at the beginning of the talk, in a very particular way. So in the recursive version, the probability law that you draw inside the algorithm here changes according to what size you draw. And here, so when you do a recursive call for a subtree of size k, this probability law will completely change, of course. And it will be different for n minus k. So you have a whole bunch of probability laws, simple enough because they're discrete, but you have a whole bunch of them to compute and to simulate. So in Boltzmann sampling and analytic sampling, you only have one, I mean, you only have a constant number of probability laws to simulate. So what's noteworthy, and this is how I like to say it, is that the randomization is global in the Boltzmann sampling because you have a same law which is calculated in all the recursive calls. Yep.
Just to be sure I've understood, so if we go back to your original example, you said four external nodes.
Yeah.
So that would be the case on the left where you're conditioning on...
But you mean located on the left, external?
On the left side of your diagram right there, the recursive version, where you're conditioning on the size K, so you know you're always going to end up with four. But on the Boltzmann on the right, that thing could come out, you're just repeating, you're just new instances of the same tree.
Yeah.
It could come out small or enormous.
What could call out small enough?
The output, the tree.
Yeah, it could come out small or enormous,
Number of leaves, it could have a huge number of leaves.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Absolutely. So a second example is general trees. So now instead of, it's not binary trees, it's trees where you can have any number of children. And they are planar? Is that how you say it? I mean, how you would say it, and that they're embedded in the plane and that they have an order in the sun. So that's an atom, so for the internal node, and then a sequence of subtrees. So the generating function is, as you know, the same as for binary trees, but the sampler is slightly different. So it's gamma of t. So we first draw a geometric variable of parameter probability g of z, and then determining according to the k that we get, we return an internal node, and k subtrees, which are k independent recursive calls to the same sampler. Okay, and so now, because I assume that at this point you might be bored, I have a few illustrations of random objects that I've drawn. So this is an odor tree. So it's a tree where a binary tree where the nodes aren't planar, so they can sort of mix. And this is of size about 100. And so this picture is by Karine Pivoteau and the next that follow. This is a circular composition, so that uses the operation that we haven't talked about of the cycle. So it's a cycle of sequences of atoms. And this one is of size about 2,000. And this is a series parallel graphs. I always get tricked up by the specification, which is why I haven't written it. And this is a very big graph. And this is a functional graph, which you could, of course, generate of another way much easier, but this is a nice picture to have. So now we come to the part where I discuss exactly how you pick this parameter z, which I sort of glossed over. So we have some very neat, very elegant algorithms. But as you've pointed out, you don't really know what they give out. They could give out small elements or they could give out huge elements. And you would ideally like to control this a little bit better to be able to make it useful. So this is where size control comes into play and the concept of rejection, which is what I've been doing manually when I kept entering and having it regenerate a new tree until it gave one of the size that I wanted. So this is where analytic combinatorics comes a little bit into play, because the generating function of the combinatorial classes that we have can be categorized in several of three categories, main categories, according to where their singularity is positioned. So we have the class of elements which are bumpy. So this is... the image skipped, but this is these are the plots of the size distribution, which is this thing here, as you were asking. So for a generating function, it's f of n times z of n divided by the normalized by the generating function. So for bumpy classes of objects, the size distribution is centered in the size that you target using the expected value. So you have this relationship on this expected value, and by inverting it to solve for z or approximating it, you can find the z that will best target the size that you want to draw. So with bumpy elements, when you do this, you get a fairly concentrated distribution of elements around the size that you want to draw, meaning that in a fairly constant amount of trials, you will get an object that's in the size that you want. We have a second class of generating functions, which we call flat, which in the beginning are slightly peakish over here, but then tend to be like this, where you have you can sort of have the same probability of drawing anything from anywhere, but there's no particular difficulty to drawing large objects. And in the same way, this approximate rejection, where you just draw an object until it's in your interval of tolerance, also works in a constant number of trials. So these are the ones that are efficient, and which you can generate an approximate time in a constant number of loops. And an exact size when you want a particular size with no tolerance in a linear number of loops. And then this one is slightly, which we call peak, because all the elements are concentrated here, is more problematic. So what peak means is that it's very, very, very high in the beginning to such an extent that there's no room left for the larger elements to be sort of generated. So for this, these binary trees, for x equals 0.25 here, I think here we're at 1/2. That means that every time that you generate a binary tree with z equal 0.25, you have 1 out of 2 probabilities of getting a tree of size 1. That's why we kept getting them. And this has to do, as I told you, with the singularity expansion of the singular expansion of the generating function. So when you do the expansion, you have something like this with what we call alpha, the singular exponent, and when it's negative, like it is for all branching structures, then that's when you have this sort of trouble. So for binary trees, we did it manually, but this is an example of the type of distribution that you could get. So as you saw, 1, 1, 1, then a big tree, then sometimes a huge one comes out. And when you take z equals to the singularity 0.25, it's the same thing as a critical Galton-Waldson process, which explains why the expected value is infinite, and you can get very large objects, but not frequently. So for these peaked classes, we have a neat trick that's very elegant to sort of to solve this problem, and this is called pointing. So pointing is a combinatorial operation, which if you have a class, then the pointed class is the original class in which you take every element and you duplicate it as many times as you can distinguish an element in it. So when I explain it, it doesn't sound convincing even to me, so that's why I have an illustration here. So imagine you have binary trees, and you take each binary tree, and for each one of them, not just this one, what you do is you put a little marker on every way you can on one of its leaves. So what this means is that for an element, a binary tree of size 4, you will get in your pointed class 4 elements. So what this means is that the larger elements are weighed by their own size, and they get increasingly more present in the size distribution. So what's neat about this is that while it does this and it improves the probability of drawing a larger element, it doesn't change the uniformity because elements still have the same distribution. Since all elements of a size n have been multiplied by n, all of the same together, then they still have the same probability of being drawn from one another. And this changes the profile of peaked distributions into flat. By basically what the derivative does here is shift the singularity back to where it's supposed to be. And so here you can see the examples of random sizes that I've drawn of trees. So here you have, as we've seen, a lot of ones. And then when you point it, then you don't have any more ones anymore. You just have big trees, which is what you wanted. So now we've covered the main topic of analytic samplers. So do you have any questions before I move on to some more? Okay, cool. So now I'm, so this basic idea of Boltzmann sampling was in the beginning of 2000, and it has known a lot of popularity, well, at least in my community back in France, for its elegance, and it has been extended in a variety of different ways. So I picked a topic which I developed myself. It's not necessarily the most exciting one, but it's the one I can talk to you about most. So my topic is how to extend it to another type of generating function, which are the Dirichlet generating functions for multiplicative objects. So what is special about multiplicative objects is that they have not been studied much. Not much is known on them, on combinatorial multiplicative objects. And more specifically, there have been no known random generation methods before this to generate them randomly. Efficient ones, I mean. So for those that are not familiar with the notion of multiplicative combinatorics, basically what we are used to dealing with are additive objects, of which the Cartesian product, when you have a pair of elements, the size of this pair is the sum of the size of the two components. So when you have a binary tree, of course, the size of a binary tree is the size of the left subtree plus the size of the right subtree when you're counting the leaves. But with multiplicative objects, this changes. The Cartesian product, the size of it is the product of each of the components. So if we have a tree now, of which we're going to put now labels on the leaves because having one or zero on the labels is pointless, the size of this tree is going to be the product of the subtrees. So here the size was 5, and now here it's 2 times 7 times 5 times 4 times 4, which is this. And so in the additive combinatorics, you had ordinary generating functions for unlabeled objects and exponential generating functions for labeled objects. Now in multiplicative combinatorics, you have Dirichlet generating functions. And I think the first time this was sort of considered this way outside of analytic number theory in a combinatoric perspective was by Huang in 1994. So one of the things you could do is that you could think of the recursive method, the good old trusty divide and conquer. So you could think, well, I want to generate multiplicative objects. This is going to be my go-to option because it's something that's probably assured to work. But the problem is, to do something that's similar to the recursive method before, you would have a problem because you would find yourself constantly doing prime factor decomposition. Because now it's not divided by a subtree of which the left is k and the right is n minus k. It's the left is d and the right is n divided by d from the Dirichlet convolution. So this factor decomposition is a bummer. And you also have the fact that the number of nodes is exponentially larger than additive objects because you need a lot more to have significant objects. And finally, you would have, if you did the recursive method and you would say, I want an element of size, a prime, you would be out of luck because there's only one element that's of this size. So another problem is the size distribution of these objects is highly irregular, as you can see here. So this is the size distribution of additive objects, so basically the coefficients of the generating functions plotted on a graph. This is a log plot, which showed that the growth is, as expected, exponential. And this is the same type of plot for multiplicative binary branching factorizations. And as you can see, every time there's a red spot, that means there's only one element. So you go boop, 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 you go up, down, all around. And there's no really good way to say, I want an object of this size, and then you're always going to get the same. And it's not, you can't claim that you've been typically observing these objects. So you can extend the idea of analytic sampling to multiplicative objects. And this is a theorem that we have. So let C be a multiplicative combinatorial class described by the disjoint union, the Cartesian product, the sequence, and well-founded recursion, among other things. Then you can add cycle and set, et cetera, et cetera. Under some hypotheses on the generating function, a Dirichlet sampler for C can generate an object of size n with some error in O log n squared worst case time complexity. So one of the things that was important is that the random values of the labels are Z distributed, and getting one of an O of one was quite a challenge. And then the analysis is completely different than that for the additive samplers, because you have to call two analytic number theory theorems. And then, of course, the tuning of the control parameter, which I explained before by the expected value, inverting the expected value expression, is completely different here because the expected value does not exist. So you have to find other ways of doing this tuning. And so here is a large, like 1,000 multiplicative tree of size 1,100. And here's an ordered factorization that's this huge size that was generating in 17 seconds. And here are all the factors of the factorization. And again, as you can see, the specification of the algorithm is extremely simple. This is the equivalent of the Z parameter. You evaluate the generating function. You draw a geometric lot. And then you call recursively the samplers on this class k times, and you return that. So for multiplicative objects, as I told you, they're fairly not well-known objects. And so what was interesting right away as soon as we had these samplers was to see if we could make conjectures on little studied objects that might actually after be proven. And the thing is, for these objects, it's very hard to know what's going on, but once you have made a conjecture, it's easy to prove, or some conjectures are easy to prove. So for ordered factorizations, which are a sequence of integers, except for the integer 1, we were able to conjecture that the number of factors in random ordered factorizations, no, that's not what we were able to conjecture. We were able to conjecture that the number of factors which are specifically equal to 2, 3, 4, 5 follow a gamma distribution. And what was fairly nice is that once we conjectured it, we brought it to this guy who had already worked on these objects, and he was able to say, ah, yes, I can find the proof, and he proved it in one page. But it's a fairly interesting thing because I'm not familiar with many combinatorial objects specifiable by these classes in which gamma distributions arise naturally. Okay. So that's the extension that I decided to talk to you about, but there are many other developments that I sort of mentioned, and I'm just going to go through them quickly. So you can extend the specification to have colors, and having colors means that now you don't have only atoms that are plain bland black. You can have some that are red, some that are blue, some that are green, et cetera, et cetera. The challenge in these colored objects, because it could just sound as though you're adding more atoms, is that if you're adding colors, then you're adding symmetries in your objects. And so the point of that work with them was to be able to generate samplers which do not over-generate some symmetries and under-generate others, but all elements with a given composition. Then another big, huge work in progress is multidimensional generation, first published by Boudini and Ponti in 2010 and a work in progress that I'm participating in which now we are dealing with not single-valued generating functions, but multidimensional generating functions. And this is useful as soon as, so all these objects are uniform, but as soon as you want to constrain your objects, for instance, you say, I don't want to generate random uniform trees. I want to generate random uniform trees that have a specific height or that have a specific branching property. Then you would have to use multi-dimensional generating functions, and the whole arsenal of tools there is much, much harder to prove that the rejection is done in good time. Then you have some more recent work on holonomic specifications where they have established differential equation on the combinatorial specifications and have been able to derive exact time linear samplers for very specific classes for the moment. And Fusi and his co-authors also extended these constructions to generate randomly planar graphs. On the implementation side, I've told you how easy and simple this is, but for a long time, one of the big problematic things about this was evaluating the generating functions when they get really complex. Because all the examples I mentioned here are toy examples, but in practice, you would want specifications which could span like 30 equations. And then you get a really complex generating function to match. And how to evaluate that efficiently and not have so much overhead that you would rather go to another more costly method. So that was a long work in progress by Pivoto, Salvi, and Soria, which they published in 2008. And I guess the TA Family Cup is over. In 2008, and then another thing is that generating the random laws, when I say you do a Bernoulli variable or a geometric variable, the probabilities inside are real, but of course you don't work with arbitrary precision, you don't work with infinite precision reals, you work with arbitrary precision. So how do you simulate the probability laws in the most efficient, most precise, exact manner? So that's a whole other can of worms. And then also, more recently, a complementary approach to the oracle and the bit complexity has been the approximate evaluation rejection, in which the idea basically is that you don't evaluate the generating functions anymore, you guess their value, and you add a little bit of machinery to the algorithm so that they are able to compensate for the loss in accuracy in the evaluation. And in this case, you spend a lot less time evaluating the generating function and more time rejecting objects because you're going to be rejecting a lot more to compensate for the bias. And there have been a few other uses, and one that I am pretty fond of is by Angelique Steger and Constantino Panagiotou, is to use these samplers not as algorithms, but as proofs, automatic proofs. So basically, to give you the sketch of the idea, instead of proving a property for every object of size n and doing an induction or something, they say we draw a random object from this power series distribution and we are going to show properties on it thanks to the independence properties. Like for a binary tree, if you want to prove something on all binary trees, you just draw an object and show that you can prove it on the left and right subtree. So it's a way of doing sort of induction, but without making as much effort as it. So there, I think that's the end of my talk.
Are there any questions for Jeremy?
Yep.
So you spoke about multi-dimensional generating function. That means multi-variable?
Yep, multi-variable, way. Yeah.
And one other question. Do you know what difference it makes, the fact that you're not operating in infinite precision? Any idea how that is skewing the distribution of the sampling?
How that is skewing the distribution of the sampling. We expect that if you take, for instance, 40 digits in your precision, you would have a good enough precision. So that was the sort of common knowledge, like you would say, that's, we're sure it's not going to be that bad. Yeah. And then the work into bit complexity has shown also how many bits you need of precision to be able to have, to never run into a case where you don't have the bits that you need. And this can, I actually can show you a quick example of this. Yeah, I didn't see it. I feel silly. Is that it?
There's the next one.
Thank you. So if you want to simulate a Bernoulli variable of P, there's one algorithmic way of doing it. So you have the probability P as its binary-based development. So one algorithm to simulate this is you take K, which is a geometric of 1/2, and then you return the kth bit of this development. So for instance, this K. And with this algorithm, you know that the geometric of 1/2, this is just a coin flip. So either you believe that your computer can produce these realistically or you don't.
Yeah.
That's more like a religion, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so once you've done this and you've returned this k of bit, then you know that the precision you're going to need if you do like a whole bunch of things is just the number of the size of the longest run. And that's how many bits of precision you really need to never come into a trouble. Thank you.
So you said that you have some errors still, but sometimes you'll be, your size will be one off. Did I read that right?
My size will be one off.
You said that there will be some error epsilon in 0 or 1.
Epsilon. The epsilon that I mentioned is that we basically have two types of rejection. We have the approximate size where you say I want elements of size n within 10%, and then you have the exact size where you just want your size n. But there's no error.
Okay.
Or maybe what you think I was referring to is this approximate evaluations rejection.
Yeah, the Dirichlet.
Yeah?
I did read that wrong. Sorry.
Okay.
All right, well, let's thank Jerry again. Nancy and Rob, big cheers once again.